Hello and welcome to the Wake Up Call podcast. Today we're speaking with Mr. Jim Bovard about the TSA. Mr. Bovard is an investigative journalist and member of the USA Today Board of Contributors. He has also written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post, and he is a contributing editor of The Freeman and The American Conservative, as well as a regular contributor to the Future of Freedom magazine. He is the author of Public Policy Hooligan, Rollicking and Wrangling from Helltown to Washington, and The Free Trade Fraud, How Congress Pillages the Consumer and Decimates American Competitiveness, along with 8 other books. You can follow his work at jimbovard.com/blog. That's B-O-V-A-R-D. You can find him on Facebook under Jim Bovard and on Twitter at Jim Bovard. For more information, please see the show notes page for this episode at wakeupcallpodcast.com/TSA. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on.
So let's talk about how airport security was like before the TSA. What was it like back then, and why was the TSA ultimately established?
Well, it was a minor pain in the butt before 9/11. I mean, there would be every now and then there'd be some hassles with the screeners, but a huge difference was they were not federal agents. And if you disagreed or spoke back to a screener, you weren't facing federal charges. And they also did not have the right to physically molest you. If something happened and the screener did what would be considered sexual assault by the law of the state they were in, they were not able to claim sovereign immunity. But after the screw-ups on security on 9/11 by some of the airport screeners, but a lot more importantly by the FBI and the CIA and other federal agencies, the Congress and the Bush administration rushed to federalize airport security and basically act like giving this vast amount of arbitrary power to these thousands of federal agents would somehow make us safe. Now, people have forgotten that back in 2010, the Secretary of Transportation promised that TSA agents would be the best and the brightest. That was a long time ago.
How big exactly is the TSA? What all does it entail?
Well, the TSA primarily deals with the airport security, though they are sending Viper teams out now to raid, train stations, bus stations, and things like that. But they've got around 45,000-47,000 TSA agents, screeners, working at the airports. And that's their biggest impact. And that's been, it's the most visible change in the Americans' lives in the war on terror in the last 15 years, is that you can't, it's very difficult to fly now without being harassed by federal agents.
Now, let's go back to the pre-9/11 days again for a moment. The security that existed, the airport security that existed at that time, was that primarily decided on by airports and airlines? Was it decided on by local and state governments? Were there a lot of federal regulations even then? What did that look like?
It was a combination of the airports and local and state mandates as well as federal standards. The FAA had a major role in setting the standards, and the FAA was negligent, as it usually is, on a number of things. There were a number of things which could have been done better or done differently. But people forget that a primary reason that the hijackers succeeded on 9/11 was that the government had always encouraged people to basically passively submit to a hijacking basically as the best way to keep themselves safe. And it was that federal advice that played a huge role in the hijacker's success on 9/11. And that's something which is, left out of the balance sheets on this, but it was certainly for the first 3 airliners which crashed that day, that there was, my impression is they had almost no resistance, if any, from the passengers. And the fourth one, the passengers did, fight back, and it's unclear whether that was a factor in the plane crashing or whether it might have gotten shot down.
Well, I'm glad we're correcting that record, because a lot of the time you'll hear people say, oh, before the TSA, you had your private security, and look at what happened. And we haven't had a major terrorist attack of that level since the TSA, so the TSA keeps us safe. But in reality, that's not true, and the government was to blame for what happened on 9/11 in terms of the security apparatus and the way passengers were taught to deal with hijackings.
Right. There was, I mean, people were supposed to stay passive, and passivity on airplanes and in most other places of life is not a good recipe for safety.
Right. Now, going back to whether the TSA actually keeps us safe, what is its record of stopping threats? Has it stopped any major threats? And just how effective is the TSA at doing what it's supposed to do?
Well, the TSA has a great record for seizing shampoo bottles. TSA is always bragging about how they seize X number of weapons at the airports, but my impression is in most of those cases, it's simply people who might have a concealed carry permit or whatever, or be transporting and, you know, be a little absent-minded. I'm not aware of any attempt at hijacking here in the U.S. or hijacking or other detonation or whatever that the TSA has stopped. For the first 4 or 5 years they were around, they would put out an annual press release and basically be bragging about the number of fingernail clippers that they seized. I've never aspired to hijack a plane, but if I was going to do it, I wouldn't use a fingernail clipper.
No, and isn't it true that whenever there is an attack or an alleged attack that actually is stopped, like the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, it's not because the TSA and the security apparatus in place stops it that these threats are prevented. It's because there are private individuals who see suspicious activity or there's some other circumstance that prevents those attacks from going through.
Right. I mean, that was especially clear in the case on Christmas Day, I think around Christmas 2009, with the alleged underwear bomber. There are a lot of questions about the federal story on that, and it was total debacle for the TSA, but typical for Washington, federal agency screws up massively and then gets far more arbitrary power, which is what happened with the TSA starting in 2010 when they brought in massively the whole body scanners and the enhanced pat downs, where they were basically, being paid well to squeeze boobs and balls.
Let's talk about those enhanced pat downs, because, I mean, that's probably the biggest beef that regular Americans have with the TSA, and it's something that happens, I think, more often than people think. What exactly are the civil liberty violations and just the simple decency violations that the TSA has occurred over the years?
Well, the TSA, beginning in late 2010, launched a new set of search procedures, which were, I think, they've used various acronyms or labels for them. Enhanced pat downs was one of them, and this is basically the TSA agents, pat you all over the body, and it's especially intrusive for women who get their breasts pawed, or for guys who get their family jewels flattened. I'm not aware that they've ever caught, found any bombs or stuff that people actually intended to threaten an airline with. But some people suspect that this is simply a way to train people to submit to whatever federal agent commands. I had an experience. I was flying back from Portland, Oregon, back to the East Coast on Thanksgiving, this past Thanksgiving. And I got to the airport 2 hours ahead of time, so I had lots of time. So I said, I'll opt out. I figured it'd take an extra 5 or 10 minutes to, instead of going through the whole body scanners, I was patted down. And that's kind of, I've gone through this routine a number of times. And then the novelty was that the TSA agent who was, looked like in, the TSA agent then took his glove and ran it through an explosive trace detector and said that I had alerted, there was a positive alert for me for explosives. And so I said, well, which explosives? And he says, I don't know, it's in code. And I said, so how often does this machine give false positives? It's classified. So I'm thinking, that means all the time. So because of that, I was told I had to go to a private security room for a supplemental pat down. So this guy is joined by two other TSA agents, and we walk over to this walk across the airport lobby to this room that had a label on it, said private screening room, very serious business. So we go in there. There was a TSA guy who was a what they call a behavior detection officer. And the thing these folks were supposed to do is be very sharp and pick up all the special giveaway signs that show that someone is a terrorist. Now, TSA has got a very, TSA is the only, law enforcement agency in the world that thinks that terrorists, that a warning sign for them is that they make complaints about airport security. But this is actually in the confidential list of TSA's warning signs for people who have too many complaints about airport security. So we're in this room. This TSA guy starts to interrogate me. How long were you in Portland? What were you doing? Where did you stay? I answered his questions, and I finally told him that I was accustomed to TSA behavior officers asking me much better questions. I think he was kind of perturbed. I made some other comments about their security theater. What the lead agent did, he starts firmly patting me down, tugging in my shirt like he thought it was a Superman's cape. And so I said, "You want me to take this shirt off?" He said, no, keep it on. Okay. So I was traveling, I had bulky shirt pockets, and he started pawing one. He said, "What's in there?" So I glanced down, I dug deep into it, and I found half a peanut. So he nods his head and kind of looks at the other guys, and then he does the same routine with the other pocket and says, "What's in there?" So I dug around with my finger and pulled out a small ball of lint. So I'm like, okay, well, damn, there's a terrorist suspect if ever there was one. So he was really patting very vigorously on the on my shoulders and back, and I'm thinking like, dude, I offered him to take off the frickin' shirt. What do you want? And then he starts going up and down my legs. And where it got really interesting was he says he told me I had to hold my they had taken my belt away long ago. I mean, the same thing that they do for convicts or people that they lock up in jail and they're afraid they're going to hang themselves with their belt. So he says to hold my pants up by the loops on the sides. So I did. And then for three times, he amused himself by grinding his palm into my groin. Maybe he thought that my private parts were a nuclear weapon, but it felt like the TSA equivalent of a kick in the balls. It's a situation, you're in a closed room, there's three agents. If I push back hard, and then all of a sudden I'd be facing charges for assaulting a federal agent. After a few more minutes, they announced my examination was finished and that I'd be allowed to fly. I'd be allowed to catch my flight. So as soon as I was, set free from that room, I pulled out my SLR camera and then circled back and started taking photographs of that room and the entire area. Another TSA agent who had not been in that room came up and announced that I was prohibited from taking any photographs of that room. I said, "Look, I just interrogated there. I got a right to capture the scene." And he's kind of like, "Hmm." So I circled around and took some other shots, and then I got back and I did one story for this, and then I filed a Freedom of Information Act request to try to find out what kind of videotapes they had of this. About a month and a half ago, I was surprised that they actually answered my FOIA request and sent me some of the sent me videos, five or six different videos of my time in the Portland airport, but there was a 7-minute gap, and that was the 7 minutes behind that closed door, and that was the most important part. That's where the worst abuse took place. But the feds, they march behind closed doors, and it's like, we didn't do nothing. As a part of my FOIA response, the feds had statements from each of the three agents, two of which were written after I